Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread. And our guest this week from Australia, Sharon Boggan. Hi, Sharon.
Good day. How you going?
Now, thank you for that. Thank you for doing the good day thing, because that gets it off on the right foot. Okay, now, as a former teacher, going through your websites, as a former teacher, the one thing that stuck to me is the statement, "I'm not going to write your paper for you." I love that.
Yeah, well, there was a stage there where I was getting lots of emails from, obviously, what we call high school students here. I don't know what, sort of 16, 17, 18 year olds just before university.
High school,
mm-hmm. Do you call it high school there?
Yes.
And they were wanting me to answer all these questions, and I thought, if I answer these questions, I'm writing their paper for them. So it's all up on the website. I put it up on a page on the website. I just figured I'm going to make them read if they...
Yep.
I mean, more or less stop the emails of people asking these questions about being a fiber artist. So it worked. It was good.
Stopped it, huh? Well, that's just it. Yeah, if they send you email and you write in response, then it's just a copy paste and tie
that's
it together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted them to think about whatever it was that they were writing about. So I put the information on the website so they could find it. But they had to ask a question themselves and go looking for the answer, which is what you're supposed to do when you're writing an essay.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. So that's what I did.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I love it. I love it because the last time that I taught high school science, which is now 15, 16 years ago, one of the most, and I had not taught for several years. It was a job between magazine jobs. And the change in students was significant. And I kept getting, because when you're teaching science, you know, you just ask them questions and make them think about it. Same thing. You know, do your homework, think about it, figure these things out. And time again, I would get, "Would you just tell us the answer and then we'll remember it for the test?" No, we're not doing it. No, we're not doing it that way. Yeah.
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 Yeah. You've got to exercise your brain like everything else in your body.
Yeah. Yeah, that was I annoyed many a student with that. No, I'm not doing that. Figure it out. Yeah. The most you're going to get is it's on this page. Find it.
Yeah.
So I love that. That one was great. Yeah, I'm not writing your paper for you. You got to actually do some work.
Yeah.
Yep. So okay, then I have two questions out of the gate. That one, and then where does the name Pintangle come from?
I always use those pins with the bobbly bit on the end.
Mm.
It's the coloured bobbly bit because I'm forever dropping them. And if they've got the bobbly bit on the end, you can see them. And one time I dropped the whole tin and there was this tangle of pins.
Oh, I've done that.
So, and I was trying to think of a name for a website and... all the obvious names had gone, you know, like that referred to the stitching. And I thought, Pintangle, that's a good thing. So, that's where it came from. I dropped a bunch of pins. And
Excellent. That's why our URL is We Talk Fiber, because everything that has to do with stitching has been taken six times over. There's just no way to get,
But I don't think it's that important anymore. I think, you know, people get to know you and then as long as you've got something that's memorable, then it's fine. You know, I didn't worry about it too much. I just thought, I just have to think of something now. I have to work my brain.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Yep. Yeah. All right, now, crazy quote. Now, I followed you, I get the, on my Feedly news feed. I've been following you for quite a while. And this crazy quilting stuff, and when I mentioned crazy quilting, Christine was all over it. so I find it absolutely fascinating. My first reaction was, what a mess. And then,
yeah.
You know, and then you start looking at it and you go, no, it's not. This is, yeah.
And I mean, that's the challenge of crazy quilting. Because actually one of my students once said to me, oh, like all I ever make is a hot mess. And I thought, yeah, that's what it is. It's a hot mess. You know? And the thing is, I mean, I have been trained in the visual arts, and I saw crazy quilting and I thought, I can do that. That's easy. That's just a whole lot of stuff, you know, and I get to use all my beads and my lace. And, oh, yeah, I can do that. So I tried it and I made a mess. And I got a nook and it went in the bin. And then I thought, okay, I'll give it another go. Like, this is 2 days later. I was obsessed with the thing. And then, sure enough, I made another mess. And then third time, you think I'd learn, but you know, it had gone in the bin again. And then the third time, I sort of thought, okay, there's more to this than meets the eye. Okay, there are no rules. You can put anything on it. You don't have to have seams that meet or anything like that. You can use every embroidery technique that you can think of if you want to, but you've got to have some control and some sort of sense of leading the eye around it. And that's where I started pulling all my, what I had been taught in design theory onto a block, you know, and then it worked. And I've never been able to just jump in and just make a block without it becoming a mess. Or so I've always had to have in my back pocket all that stuff that I was taught about harmonizing colors and leading the eye around the, you know, like compositional theory, really, in a painting. I just really applied it to crazy quilting, and basically that's what I teach now. Yeah, and that's what made it work. But so it's harder than people realize, and yet it's easier too than, and I think a lot of fun, you know.
Okay, for the clueless people, me included, is you create a block, and there's a plan for that block,
it's just freeform. You just
okay.
Like these days you can get patterns for those blocks if you want them, but the best way to work and the most fun way to work is to get yourself a pile of fabrics, sort out sort of a basic color scheme that you like, and then you put a piece down, and I usually advise 5 sides, and then to one side you add another piece of fabric, and it's the flip and sew method. Do you know what I mean by flip and sew?
No.
No? I do. I've done them before, though, so I have a little head start.
Yeah, okay. So it's a bit hard to explain without, like, you know, visuals, but you're working on a foundation piece of fabric, and you put your first piece of fabric down, and then you put your second piece of fabric against it, on top of it. You sew a seam down one side of that, and then you flip that fabric, and you press it flat.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then you trim another. Usually, because you're working with scraps, they're usually uneven, so you just sort of trim your seam, and then those two become like one piece of fabric, and you put another piece of fabric on top of that, and you sew a seam, and then you flip the third piece open, and you press that, and you carry on around the block.
Okay, I see that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a bit hard to. I'm waving my hands around here beautifully, but you're.
No, I get that. I get it. So. So this is an ideal embroidery sewing project thing for people who can't ever throw anything away. Then.
Yeah. If you're into this sort of memorabilia. In fact, one of the reasons it was so popular in the Victorian era is because Queen Victoria was so into memorabilia, and it became a sort of the thing you did, the fashionable people did, was they had a crazy quilt draped over their chaise lounge, you know. And it was filled with memorabilia. And it, we find all sorts of things, like in those days, what's a good example? Cigars and cigarettes, when they were sold, had a silk given away with them. And by silk, I mean a little woven silk picture. And the wives of the husbands that used to buy the cigars and cigarettes, because that's, you know, was what used to happen, used to collect these silks, what we call silks, and then incorporate them into their quilts. And so there's all sorts of historical ephemera now that we find in vintage crazy quilts. You know, that's just one example. Like ribbon, like in Australia, we have agricultural shows. I don't know whether, like in America, you must have the equivalent where in rural districts where people judge prize.
Oh yeah,
and,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. The county fair, know, the state yeah. fair, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so we call them agricultural shows, and ribbons are given away. On for the various, you know, best jam maker and all that sort of thing.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so, and we find those incorporated in crazy quilts as well. So memorabilia has always been incorporated in crazy quilts. And of course, these days we've got access to the internet, and it means that crazy quilting has sort of really become, well, even more crazy. Like we can incorporate everything. I think there's a quilt. I can't remember where it is. I think it's in the Smithsonian, where the woman who, because you really can put anything on a crazy quilt. The woman who made this quilt, her husband was a taxidermist, and she has two chipmunks.
This can't go anywhere well.
Yeah. You know, she's got two chipmunks on it, so, you know.
See, my pets bring in animals all the time, so that's why I said this can't never go. This is not going to end well.
Yeah. But, you know, like, that's an extreme, obviously.
It's creative.
It's creative, yeah. It's creative. But so when students say to me, oh, what, can I put this on a crazy quilt? I say, hey, you can put anything on a crazy quilt. If you can stitch it on there, you can put it on there. It's okay. You know,
so you know what I think would be best, though, is to get pictures of your kids, like the most awkward pictures of your kids, the worst pictures of your kids at their most, you know, the worst, most awkward phases, and put their faces on them and stitch that in. But, like, kind of don't tell them about it. Just put them sort of out of the way and then put them in there. And don't tell them until their friends are over.
Yes. But, I mean, you know, like, there's lots of family album quilts are done.
Yeah, yeah.
Family histories, particularly with the fact with computers, because you can, you know, print a photograph on fabric and away you go. You know, you can do anything on a crazy quilt. They're great fun. They're just great, and it's very addictive. It's kept me busy for 20 years, and I didn't think it would.
Yeah, that 20 years, yeah, that it's obviously addictive, yeah. So yeah. How big do these quilts get, just till you figure you've done enough on that quilt, or is there...
Well, they can be anything from a small, you know, like a meter by meter, so a yard by yard, or to a full bed-size quilt. They were never... crazy quilts were never meant to be things that were used. They were always things that were decorative, because you have your cotton quilts that, you know, come from a tradition of, you know, making do and being thrifty and all that sort of stuff. And you've got those cotton quilts, but then you've got the crazy quilts are made out of velvets and satins and all the rich fabrics that were from the dresses at the time. And they were a way of conserving, you know, not wasting that fabric. But They were never made to be put on a bed as such. They were always, as I say, draped over. They were in the parlour. They were draped over a seat or something in the parlour. Mm-hmm. And it was more a case of saying indirectly, of course, that, you know, the woman of the household was a good needleworker. Like, they were still used to showcase her needlework talents, a bit like samplers were. But she did not have to be practical. They were wealthy enough as a family where servants did the mundane stitching, and she didn't have, she could do, they were in a way like the first art quilts, and she didn't have to, so she didn't have to concern herself with being, they didn't need bedding, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yet she was still a good housewife. She was a good woman. She didn't waste things. She didn't, you know, she had these needlework skills. She didn't waste good material, you know, so there were all these other sort of thrifty values still there, but it was, you know, it was an art quilt basically, you know. And I've always found them fascinating things for that reason.
So one more dumb guy question. Does that suggest to me then that there are antique crazy quilts that are in museums or that are...
Yes, there's and they're very collectible, and they display history and things. Like, I mean, in Australia, many of our really lovely crazy quilts were made we had gold rushes just after you had gold rushes. And in fact, many Americans went from the gold rush, the gold fields in the States, and they came to Australia. But when people struck it rich, the first thing they did was order a suit. And the suits had like a satin, you know, waistcoat.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first Australian crazy quilts, or the early Australian crazy quilts, often came from the gold fields, from the dressmakers in the gold fields, because they had access to all these rich scraps.
Uh-huh.
And they made, that's a bit of Australian crazy quilt history, you know. But, I mean, you know, the States has a fantastic history of crazy quilting. But you'll find crazy quilts in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, and the Smithsonian has crazy quilts, and I can't think of offhand. There's other museums in America that has a lot of crazy quilts, but I can't think off the top of my head what they are. But they're in museums.
This is a whole new world to me. I thought crazy quilts were some more recent stitching thing that just allowed people to just go crazy. Wow.
Vintage ones, and they're really beautiful. The old ones, they're even more freeform than many of the modern crazy quilts. The modern crazy quilts sort of have more beading, and I mean, the old crazy quilts had stuff on them too. But like, it seems that in the 21st century, because we've got access to beads and charms and all sorts of things, more stuff is going on them. So there's a definite modern look to them, but the old crazy quilts are just beautiful, you know, gorgeous.
Learn something every day. All right, now your book. Okay, book. What is the book, a how to guide, or
how to do crazy quilting, but it's how to, you know, at the beginning of the conversation, how I was talking about how when I first started, everything was a mess. Well, it's about how to avoid that mess, really.
Okay.
It's what I've taught, and in the sense that it shows people how to pull together a block in such a way that, although it is crazy quilting and it has a lot of stuff on it, because you're dealing with a lot of bits and pieces with crazy quilting. So they're hard designs in many ways to pull together. And the book is about how to do that. Now, I don't want to make it sound crazy quilting to sound make it sound hard. It's not. It's a lot of fun. But you do have to stop and think occasionally.
Darn it.
Rather than just get carried away with all the beads and all the bling and all the fun, you know, you have to go, oopsie, okay, I have to just see what's this going to do to my poor viewer's eye. You
know? Yes. Now, in the crazy, in the regular quilting world, people can get pretty uptight about whether the points are, I'm way out over my skis here, whether the points are matched up and the lines are straight and all that kind of stuff.
You don't have to worry about
that. You don't care, huh?
It does not matter at all. You know?
Okay.
You if you can't sew a straight line, don't worry about it. Just,
There you go, Christine. Now that's that. Now I could do a crazy quilt. I can do a crazy quilt. Yeah.
No, it's fine. You know, like really, I'm totally serious about this. You really do not need to match points or keep things on a grid or in any way. You can just go for it. And that's the fun part. And you can go for it and you can embroider over the top. And that's, for me, because it's sort of interesting because crazy quilters sort of come from two directions. Some people have come from a quilting background and they bring with them all the worry about keeping things, their seams straight and even and all that sort of stuff. They worry about mixing fabrics and they worry about, you know, all sorts of things because of the back, the tradition they come from. And stitchers, embroiderers, worry about different things. They worry about sort of having, you know, different threads and like just stitching over a seam, thicknesses, you know, they don't like stitching over a thick seam. And there's all sorts of, like, they come to it with different baggage, you know. For quilters, you don't have to worry about sewing straight. You just go for it. You don't have to worry about mixing fabrics. If something's too thin, you just back it with a bit of interfacing. I come from an embroidery background, so I don't really like stitching through really, really thick fabric. But some people, it doesn't worry them. You know, you can mix your fabrics, which is something that is new to some quilters. They're just used to working with just cottons, you know. So yeah, it's lots of fun. Lots of fun. And you can have lace in it as well. I haven't mentioned lace.
Does it?
There's lace, there's ribbons, there's all sorts. There's loads and loads. All the goodies that you ever looked at in the haberdashery store and thought, gee, that looks pretty, you're allowed to buy.
Oh,
that's like the metallics.
Yeah, you can use metallic. I mean, there was one instance years and years ago now. I was making a quilt, and my daughter's has always been she's a circus performer and has been a circus performer for the last two decades almost. I was for a long time her costumer. And so I always had lycra and bits of synthetic bling stuff that was absolutely, for any other purpose other than a circus costume, hideous. And I had all this sort of really crass stuff that was in really bad taste. But it didn't worry me in the least. I put it in my crazy quilts. And I had one, there was one time where I had this metallic lycra stuff that was really a bit over the top, and one woman said, "You can't put that in a quilt," and I said, "Oh yes I can, you watch me." And sure enough, you know, I did, and people always admire the block, and then they say, "What's that fabric?" And I say, "Oh, it's lycra, you know." Yeah,
okay. Tangent, What, as a circus performer, what does your daughter do?
She's a tightrope walker and a trapeze artist.
No. Wow.
Yeah, that's what she does for a living. And she has done for, you know, she's been full-time at it now for, I don't know, nearly between 15 and 20 years. I have to sit down and work out how long it what is. But, yeah, she's, yeah.
Wow.
So stuff you can imagine, you know, like whenever she comes to say, there's always this trail of sequins in the carpet. You know, I've got various costumes that she's hauled out and usually said to me, what can we do with this? Or this needs a revamp or whatever, you know. But there's always, like, Eve doesn't leave the house without a sequin somewhere trailing behind her somewhere. Or glitter. Glitter's the other thing, you know. It takes me weeks to get the glitter because she wears it with the makeup, you know, like.
Oh.
You know, And then she has a shower or something, and it takes me weeks to get it out of the bathroom, you know. So, yeah. Like, you come to our place, there's sequins and glitter, and that, you know, that's life.
Yeah.
That's good.
But those outfits, there's got to be a real skill to those, because they have to be able to take a lot of stress, I would think.
Oh, yes, yes. And they do take a lot of stress. And for workaday costumes, they're constantly repaired, and they don't last long, those costumes.
So, you know. Do you watch her perform, or can you just not bear it?
Well, she performs all over the world. She's been to the States. She's worked in the States. Earlier this year, she was in Ireland, and she's been to the UK this year, and she was up in Asia earlier on, and she's just done a stint with in the Opera House with Opera Australia. So there was an opera that involved circus performers, so that they were hired to be
smokes.
In that. Yeah. So she's all over the place.
As a parent though, can you stand to watch it?
It depends on what it is, what the act is.
Okay.
Like, I'm in, like, she can, on the tightwire, she can go up on, in ballet shoes, she can go up on point. And I'm always impressed with him. Mm-hmm. He can go up on point, let alone walk a tightrope on point. But then she found
holy smokes.
Yeah, I know. And then she found these shoes one day in a knot shop, and they were 5-inch platform heels. They were real. You know, she says they were her Priscilla Queen of the Desert shoes. And I don't know whether you've ever seen that movie.
But, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so these shoes were just so extreme. And they were 5-inch shoes with this huge platform. And she says, I'm going to walk a wire in these. And I said, oh, no. And she had a practice rig set up in the back. And I couldn't watch it. I just thought, no, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to encourage this. I don't care if she's an adult. I'm not going to encourage this. Yeah. So anyway, one of the reasons I did Crazy is that I had all this fabric that involved a lot of bling.
Yeah. Oh, of all the things to have your kid grow up to be, who would expect that?
I know. Wow. Oh, well, and I mean, the other day, because they've just left, they were staying with us for a little while, her and a partner, and she's got a trapeze rig in the backyard. She's got this cube that her father's just built for her, which is like a three-dimensional cube, which she's turning into an act. And then she puts on a skirt that's a fire skirt, like it's a ring of fire, and she lights it up. She goes, hey, do you reckon this would sort of get them going? And I'm thinking, oh, cool. I'm going back to my stitching.
Yeah, yeah.
My blood pressure.
Oh, my. Wow. Oh, what fun. What fun.
Oh, yeah, it is fun. Mm.
Uh-huh. In different ways, fun, yes. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, back to stitching then. I had so much fun on your website. You chewed up most of a morning on your website. The 2020 challenge, which that's quite a challenge there. Talk about what that is.
Yeah, that's a fun challenge, but I never really, last year I was, because I go for a walk every morning, and I was talking to my husband and I said, I need something new to sort of get me going. And I've got a quilt on the blog there. You mightn't have come across it. It's called I dropped the button box because it's got so many buttons on it.
Yes. Well, that was the first time that one was the first crazy quilt I ever encountered.
All right. Well, that's
yes.
good. But what it was it was a Y2K quilt. And the idea behind that one was that you had 2,000 different pieces. Now, by different pieces in crazy quilting, that can be fabric, it can be ribbon, it can be lace, it can be buttons, it can be beads, it can be whatever you put on the quilt, and you can just count them all up, and as long as they're all different, you've got 2,000 pieces. So it's a that was a Y2K quilt, you know, or the equivalent. And then I thought, I'll do one for 2020, meaning there's 2,020 different pieces going to be used in the blocks. So they're all different fabrics, all different ribbons, different stitches. Like, you can use the same stitch again, but you only get to count it once, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the idea is variety, because the thing about crazy quilting, or the visual interest in crazy quilting, is always the variety. It's always, or what's admired is how ingenious you can be with whatever it is you're using, and how creative you can be with your stitches, how many different ways you can use buttonhole, for instance, or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's admired in crazy quilting by other crazy quilters. So it's a way of showing off too. And the thing is, I sort of thought to myself, I thought, oh, yeah, 2020, yeah, I'll do that. I came home from my walk, and I was all keen, and I had my shower and all that sort of thing. Stood in the shower and I thought, oh, I'll propose it as a challenge. And then I thought, oh, this isn't really smart as the challenge, because it's a huge project. It's a full-size quilt, and it's all hand-embroidered, and it's all, you know, hand-beaded, and, you know, it's a really big project, even though you've got till 2020 to finish it. And I thought, oh, no one will take me up on it, you know. And sure, and I sort of posted to the Facebook group. There's a couple of big crazy quilt Facebook groups. And I posted to the Facebook group, and blow me down if people weren't getting excited about it. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay, well, they're on, you know.
It took you up.
So it's a great challenge, and people are really enjoying it, so that's good, you know.
And of course, then that obligates you to make one too, then.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, like, I wanted to. And, yep. I mean, the thing of challenges is that, like, it's not going to become a UFO while I go public with it, you know.
Right.
It keeps me honest, you know?
Right, exactly, yeah. And well, so you got a year and 3 months to go then. Yep.
Yeah. I've only done 7 blocks. I've got about 60 to do, but I'll do them, you know, now, because we've been traveling. So that sort of, you know, broke the rhythm a little bit. But yeah, I'm getting back into it.
Yeah. Oh, and then wanted to ask you, I had enjoyed your video on your templates.
Oh, yeah.
The little plastic pieces.
Yeah, well, because the thing about those is that I designed them for ages. I was using bits of cardboard and, you know, to trace off stuff, trace a line and keep my seams even and things like that. And I thought, oh, I'll see what it costs to sort of get these laser cut and made. And so I put together a file and, you know, sent them, I actually tried so many people, different people. I literally sent around the world to see if they could be made at an economical price. And I ended up finding someone in Sydney, which was just great because I can work with the guys down there and they just make them. And so they got, you know, basically they get manufactured now and I sell them on my site. But it was really out of stuff that I, you know, like I needed something that would keep my seamsy, you know, I could mark and embroider along and keep things even. So yeah, they work well.
So those things are a combination of all your little cardboard pieces then.
Yeah. And you know, like I did advance further from cardboard. I got margarine tub lids and cut them out. You know?
Whatever works.
Yeah. But it was after years of doing stitching, so they really are, you know, designed for crazy quilters. You know?
Yeah. Fascinating world. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, where I really locked in following you was your Take a Stitch Tuesday effort.
Yeah. Now, that's been going for a decade.
Yes.
Yeah. Last year, we celebrated a decade of Take a Stitch Tuesday. And initially, it was just people shared their work on blogs. But as I suppose 4 or 5 years ago, I created a Facebook group. And most people are in the Facebook group now. And basically what happens is every Tuesday I post a stitch and they work that stitch and try and use it in an inventive way. And if they're people who have done the challenge before, because we do repeat the stitches. I've actually got sometimes that just runs for 12 months. Other times it's run for, like the longest it ever ran was for 3 years. But usually 2 years is about, you know, so about 100 stitches, runs for about 100 stitches. And people who have done it before, they share what they've done before and what they're doing this time around. So it gives beginners an idea on how to use these stitches. Because sometimes you look at a stitch and you think, what on earth would I do with that, you know? And then somebody turns around and creates something that you, you know, that's really wonderful, and you sort of think, I would have never thought to do that, you know. And so that's it's a great way to see how stitches can be used, and people just enjoy the learning process too. So it's quite free form. They can stitch on anything; it doesn't matter. It can be a sampler, it can be a crazy quilt, it can be anything. They just have to learn the stitch and share it.
Well, that was the thing that stuck with me on that was that it's not a project. You're encouraging people to experiment with threads and stitches and how each interact. And
yeah.
And I love the thing where you said you're trying to master two skill areas at once, the rhythm of the stitch and the refinement of keeping in line or inside a shape. But it's also that understanding what the threads do within the stitch. And because to me it was put your projects aside, haul out some cloth and just sit there and just see what happens.
And that's exactly what it's about. It's about giving yourself permission to learn a skill rather than always having to make a project, have something that's practical. I effectively believe that it's okay just to learn a skill. It's this teacher in me, you know, and I like projects. Obviously, I mean, my other challenge is to make a quilt. The 2020 quilt is, you know, it's a huge project. So that's exactly the opposite, if you know what I mean. Test is really just about giving yourself permission to sit down with needle and thread, learn a stitch and see how you can apply it and enjoy it because of the community that test has become. People really, like if you can come up with something inventive, people really celebrate that. you know, like you get lots of positive strokes for, well, you do, you know, like it's a positive environment, you know. So it's sort of, it's about learning the stitch, and it's about celebrating that learning.
Yeah, well, and see what that said to me when I was reading through all that, and I've followed it for some time, but really focused on it to get ready for this, was that personally, I need to do more of that, because I would become a better stitcher. I could see immediately I'd become a better stitcher by just sitting down with a piece of cloth and some thread, and you know,
experimenting.
Just, yeah, and just understand, grow to understand what happens with this thread in this stitch.
I mean, I think everybody becomes a better stitcher if they just sit back and experiment a bit. But what I have to always remind myself, just because I love doing that, I love just seeing what stitches can do. The world of stitchery is so rich and so involved and got such a wonderful history. But I love it. But some people don't want to always do that. They want to just sit back and relax and just, you know, do something, a project that they don't have to think too much about. And that's okay too. I don't want people to necessarily feel as though they have to be outrageously creative all the time. Mm-hmm. They can just some of the time, just give it a go some of the time. That's what I say, because that's where self-expression comes in.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just, I think it's just something that I personally, like I said, I need to do more of, but probably most people need to do more of.
Yeah. Well, I'll be starting TAST again in January. So,
okay.
You know.
So, jump on that.
I'm actually running a survey at the moment, because I always ask the group in the Facebook group, because there's a good few thousand people in there. And I say, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to start again, or do you want a continuation? But, you know, like I list the stitches as they appear, you know, each week. And the first 20 stitches are sort of like in TAST are always your basic stitches. So if you get your fingers around those stitches, you can usually build your skills in other stitches. Like, you know, you've got the basic, they're the basic. They all cover the basic hand movements, the first 20 stitches in TAST. And then after that, I sort of propose all sorts of different stitches. And so in January, depending upon what the group votes, will be I'll either be starting it again with those 20 stitches and then continuing, or I will just be continuing to this round being 100 stitches.
Mm-hmm. So. And then this 100-foot band sampler, which is an amazing accomplishment, is that the origin of this TAST thing? Is that really
work? Not really. The thing about this was that I taught for a long time, and like most teachers, I had all my samples in like those plastic folders, in a folder in those plastic sheets, you know, those plastic bags. Sleeves, yes. I used to put all my samples in there. And then one day I was lifting a huge box of folders out of the car, and I thought, why do I do this, you know? I'm going to start stitching these samplers on sampler bands the way they used to in the 17th century. Those girls knew a few things, I thought to myself, because they used to have the band samplers, and I'm sure you've heard of band samplers.
Sure, sure.
And they just used to roll them up in their sewing box, and I thought, that's sensible. None of this stupid paper business, you know. So I started making my samplers in the long bands, but I always just had them just like a normal length, you know, like as in, you know, 18, 20 inches sort of things. And during my classes and workshops and talks and things, I used to hand them out. And, it got to a stage where there was a good few of them, and I used to hand them out and let people look at them as I was talking, because stitchers love looking at stitchery rather than listening to me just drone on in the background there. They got to sort of poke and feel things. And one day I handed out my samplers and two didn't come back. They went into somebody's handbag. And I thought, oh, you rotters, you know. And I thought, I'll fix you. I'm just going to stitch them all together in one long band. And when I did that, it was about 50 feet or something. I thought, you can't do that.
There, steal that thing, yeah.
Well done.
Exactly. And so, and the thing is, when this was when it was about 40, 50 feet, because I just stitched them all together, you know. I'd started, the first sampler in that band is 1996, so, it's a long time. Anyway, I stitched it all together, and they always got so excited. Everybody got so excited that this long band sampler, you know. So I kept adding to it and adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. And then I started recording bits of my life on it as well, you know, just odd statements here and there as I was stitching. I would just add a statement, as to what was happening, just a little bit of, stitching along the way. And then that became more and more a part of the story as well. And people love it when I pull it out. People really enjoy having a good sticky beak at it, you know.
So. Yeah, that was where it really brought it home for me, because first you marvel at the length of the sampler and the number of years that you kept it going. But then when you started adding personal events in your life and thoughts and things, then it really becomes yours. And yeah.
I mean, it's a textile with a story, you know. And I mean, as a teacher, I've had to create a lot of samples at various times. So it is dual purpose. Although now, when I'm in a teaching situation and I'm talking about something and I think, oh, that's that stitch. You could use that stitch. Trying to find it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, as you're looking for one thing, you get sidetracked on something else, and you sort of say, if you're talking to a student, you said, you could do this, or you could do that, or you could, and then you end up just bamboozling the poor soul. And so you sort of think, oh, I better pull back, you know, like as the sampler, as you see the sampler, I remember, oh, you could, this would be the solution for that design problem, or that. You could do that or whatever, you know. But students love it. Students do love it.
Oh, I'm sure. And now you have to write out a document that this stitch is 4 feet down, band number 8. Yeah.
I don't think it would work.
No. Oh, well, that's an amazing. It's an amazing piece. Just the sheer size of it, but. Yeah. All because people stole your sample, your stitches. Oh,
I'd not let that happen again. I thought, they can't fit it in their handbag anymore.
No, no, yeah, rolled up. That's got to have some heft to it, huh?
It does. I can still get it on carry on a plane, but it's getting
close though.
Yeah. Because I don't like putting it in the hold. You see, I'm always worried that something's going to go astray.
Right. The ultimate gauge: can it be carry on?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Now, non-stitching stuff. I've always been curious. Journaling fascinates me, and it fascinates me because I can't do it. I don't keep it going, but it's the way I equate it is, I here in the Midwest, we hear about people hiking and I never, we got nothing here, it's just flat cornfields. And I never got hiking till I went out west it was in Arizona, and went hiking with a person, and then I got it. Wow. Yeah. No wonder people hike. What fun this is. Yeah. And then I look at journaling the same way, because to me, that's just keeping a diary.
Yeah.
But you do much more than that.
Yeah, I think for many people, when you mention journaling, what they do think of is a diary, and then they think of the diary they kept in their teen years, which are sort of angst-ridden things, you know, which no one wants to admit to, but everybody did, you know. Like have a teen years like that. But really, I think as people mature, diaries change, and instead of looking inward and figuring out who you are, which is your major job in your teen years, you start looking at the world around you, and that becomes an interesting thing to observe and record. And you don't have to record just with written language. You can record with imagery or photographs or, you know, video, sound, anything. It doesn't have to be necessarily something that's kept in a notebook, you know, even. And I've kept a journal for a long time. Since 1989, I've kept a journal every day, except for 6 weeks after my mother died. And I just think that probably I was on emotional overload, obviously, you know. I think everybody would understand that. And I find it interesting that a time when I was in crisis, I didn't turn to a diary. And the other time I stopped was just after the Canberra bushfires, where our house was in a bushfire district, and 500 houses were burnt to the ground in Canberra. And in our street, we're only in a straight street of 18, and five houses went, and our garden went, and we fought the fire. We stood there and defended the house. And for about six weeks after that, I didn't really keep a diary. I kept all of the newspaper cuttings, and I took photos and stuff like that, but I drew, but I didn't keep a diary as such, you know. So the two crisis points, like two big crisis points, I didn't keep a diary, but all the rest I did. And I'm really pleased I did, because I sort of recorded all sorts of things. Like, there's this newfangled thing called blogs, and I learned how to do HTML, and this is how you do this, and this is how you do that, and, you know, I can print a photograph on fabric, and, you know, and then there's all the sort of, at one stage I can remember recording about this new thing called CDs, and there's going to be music on it, and I couldn't imagine people replacing what they had, their vinyl records, with CDs. And then I recorded things like in my diary of things like a Walkman, what a Walkman was, and when iPods came out, and all the changes in technology, the things I did in textiles, the stuff in that happened in our life, the travels that we've done. And it has been a really worthwhile project, and just observing all those things. But I've not been one to look I'm not a great one on the self-analysis stuff. I'm more interested in what's happening outside of me, because what goes on in my head is pretty little. there's always interesting things outside of, you know what I mean, in the outside world. You know, it's more interesting. And so I've recorded that, you know, and of course world events, all sorts of things. Books I've read, music I've listened to. Yeah. Yep.
See, I don't have that. Every time I've tried it, just 3 weeks later, it's just, whatever. I don't have anything to say.
It's tough.
Yeah, well, but you can bet there'll be something if you look outside of yourself, you know.
And that's probably where I've gone wrong, is I'm trying to write down what's in my head, and that's probably where I've gone wrong.
Because there's a huge tradition of that in the mental health field, for instance. You know, often psychologists and psychiatrists will ask people to keep a journal, you know. And the idea is that they get their worries out onto paper. The thing is, I'm not keeping a journal in order to write my mental health, if you know what I mean. I'm keeping a journal to record my life and the things I see in my life and the things I do. Delving too deep is sort of just a bit pointless because there's not much there. You know, truly. some days that's Sandy. I tell people just look outside, just go for a walk. Just there's something in the news. You will have seen something online, you will have talked to someone, you will have, you know, that has made your day interesting. And that's the way you live your life, is we live our lives interacting with people. We live our lives responding to the news we hear. We delight in a bird or a squirrel or whatever it is in our garden. We go for a walk. We, you know, so on and so forth, you know.
Okay, I have to take a different look at this. I'm still not sure I'd do it, but...
I call it observation.
I think you can.
Yeah. I just observe your life, you know. Like we go for a walk every morning and we're sort of in an area where we have access to, it's like a park, a national park. And every morning we go walking and we always see wallabies and we always see kangaroos. And I just, a few years ago, I started tracking the numbers that I saw. And then I started recording the birds that we see and just the wildlife that we see. And like now we're in drought, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I can see the animal numbers, what's happening with those, you know. It's just interesting. It's just an interesting thing to do. Or we might see a bird that we don't normally see. Like, for instance, last year I saw some ibis. Now, we see ibis down on the coast, but we don't see them up here. And we saw one, and then we saw a couple of months later, we saw five, you know. And it'll be interesting this year to see whether we see more, you know. Mm-hmm. And just stuff like that, you know. So that's like almost a natural science type observation, field notebook thing, you know.
And what a thing to leave behind.
Well, yeah, I don't listen. I don't worry about that. I sort of have this feeling nobody's going to be able to read my writing anyway. So
that's why they invented typewriters and computers.
But you know, I sort of figure, well, you know, they're not going to. I do put pictures in my. I do draw as well. So I do sketch, but you know, very often my sketchbooks are now separate from my journals. So. Simply because I like the paper to have good watercolor paper on the sketchbooks. So, and you can't, you know, good watercolor paper costs money, and I'm not going to spend. It's nearly a dollar a sheet. Yeah. I'm not going to waste a dollar a sheet. You know, I spend a dollar a sheet on just rabbiting on about, I don't know, something that I've seen in the morning. You know
what I mean? Different.
Yeah, it is a little pricey. Yeah.
Yeah. So I use that for watercolor, and then I just, you know, I keep a regular journal for journaling, you know.
Right. Sharon, what a ride. This has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good. I hope I haven't talked too much.
Oh, no. No, that's your job is to talk. So you did
that's
well.
Right.
Good.
It's not our job. That's your job. Yeah. Yeah, no, really, really a treat. Thank you for making the time and sharing all this with us. Really been fun.
It's been fun, yeah, anytime. Yep.
Well, there may be another time. I got more stuff, yeah.
Oh, good. You're on.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
Take care.